I'm looking at your background. I'm looking at the fact that you're in oil and gas. You're a businessman, a CFO, an executive. Some people might look at that and say, "Why are you a Democrat?"
Why wouldn't I
Well,
be?
I mean, I guess a lot of folks have the impression, and maybe wrongly so. I mean, set the record straight that somehow Democrats are inherently anti-business. What would you say about that?
I'm pro-business. I'm pro-business all the way. If anything, I'm very independent in terms of my point of view. I am a businessman. I'm an accountant. I'm a CPA. In terms of party affiliation, there's no place for me in the Republican Party. I'm quite satisfied that there's no place for me in the Republican Party. I'm pro-choice. I support gay marriage. Very reasonable and independent in my point of view as it relates to financial matters. And I'm very comfortable in the Democratic Party.
When you say reasonable in your point of view in financial matters, what does that mean?
Well, I'm an accountant and I want to get the numbers right. So where I come
That
from,
hasn't happened
it's
a lot lately.
no, it hasn't.
It's
And here's the
that's been a problem.
it's been a problem. And here's the funny thing, it's very useful. I mean, if you get the numbers right, then you can go to the next level, and the next level is for the legislature, which is okay, what policy are we going to advance? But it starts with getting the numbers right.
How do you get the numbers right? I saw Harvey Hildebrand the other day, who's also running for this on the other side, say that maybe we need to do updates more often, maybe do them every 6 months
Oh, I
instead of
think.
waiting as long as we do now. Is that a reasonable idea?
Well, I think I'll come back to that. I think it takes two things to get the numbers right. First of all, it takes basic competence. And second, you can't have a political agenda. Okay, getting the numbers right is about being non-political about it. Let's get the numbers first, and then let politicians make their decisions. The technical matter that Hildebrand raises, maybe we do it more often, that might be worth looking into. I don't think that's the major issue here.
So you do think that politics has entered into it over the years, as far as how those numbers come out?
Yes, absolutely. I think so. I think there's no question.
When you look at the outgoing person in this office, Susan Combs, you mentioned that you're pro-choice. You know that on the other side you have Glenn Hager, who's running as the guy who passed the abortion law in the
I'm aware of
state.
that. I'm
You
aware of that.
have the recent comments from Combs saying to her own party, it's not all below the waist when it comes to
I
women.
saw that.
What do you make of that dynamic and the fact that those are the kind of comments you hear from Republicans when they're outgoing?
Well, honestly, I'm not going to work on the social issues. I am pro-choice,
But
but
you bring
that
it up,
isn't
that's
the
why I asked.
well, but that isn't the job of the comptroller.
Right.
If anything, I would answer your question by saying that's not the comptroller's job. And so what I have in mind, the reason why I'm doing it as a financial guy, as a professional, is that I want to go in and do the comptroller's job. And the comptroller's job is about numbers first. It's about holding people accountable. And I think, by the way, you asked Democrat. I think as a Democrat, as comptroller, I can be very useful to Texans. The legislature will be Republican, the way the districts are drawn. So to be in a position where I can really hold people accountable, as contrasted to just sort of quietly going with the flow, if I, my Republican opponent will be fearful of being as aggressive as I can be. I can be very aggressive. I can be very independent in my point of view. And when I talk to people in the business community and I talk to my neighbors, and they're encouraging me to do this, that's what they really want in a comptroller. They don't want political ideology. They want to get the numbers right. And they want to know what the numbers are.
Is part of the challenge in running for this seat educating people about what the comptroller does, since you have so much sort of gorilla dust being thrown in the air, is the way I would put it, with all of the abortion issues being thrown out there and everything else, all the social issues, all the let's fight Washington sort of stuff that's in the ads of the folks on the other side. So maybe people are confused about what comptroller does, since
No.
the ads certainly don't reflect what you're talking about, which is being the CFO of Texas.
What people get is that the comptroller is an accountant. And accountants don't spend money, accountants just watch over money. People get that. It's not hard to educate them on that. And then, so you ask the question, is anybody doing that now? And that's when, well, I'm just really not sure. But I can tell you that when I'm controller, it'll be very apparent to everybody that you have an accountant in that role, forming a fiercely independent point of view and holding people accountable, watching our money.
I noticed that on your website you talked about, as part of your plan and part of your values, spending more money, and don't let me put words in your mouth I don't have it in front of me, but spending at least adequate funding for education. Is that not outside the purview of the comptroller? Why include that?
I do have a point of view that we have to invest. And when I talk about forming a fiercely independent point of view, it's like any good CFO in a company will report to his CEO or her CEO and the board of directors. And in addition to making sure that they're minding the money, there is the question of, are we making strategic investments where we need to make strategic investments? And so for the comptroller to point out that this is what we're investing in education, this is how it's trended over time, that will inform people's judgment. I can tell you this, talking to my neighbors and talking to people in the business community, we're a very prosperous state. We have plenty of money. Why don't we have enough money for education? Why don't we have enough money for roads? Why don't we have enough money for water?
Well, and in the you're from Houston. In the Houston business community, they went for quite some time. This is going back to the 70s. They went for quite some time without having a bond issue pass in Houston in the HISD, and it was a businessman by the name of Ken Lay who went around and got the chamber and got the Greater Houston Partnership and others to say, we have got to invest in our schools because this is how we're going to have a skilled workforce.
Right.
And so that is something that I think maybe people don't immediately connect with the business community, just naturally connect that. But it is something that business leaders understand. We have to do a better job of investing in our kids. That's the kind of message you would take forward?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer. I think in business we get it. Same thing in public life. You have to make critical investments. The Texas that I moved into when I moved here, I was age 14. It was 1975. There was an attitude that we need to invest. The state is growing, and we need to keep up with growth. Investing supports businesses coming into our state. Mm-hmm. Investing in education and roads, water will help us, you know, create jobs and all the other things.
What do you make of the tug of war that we have in this building? You watched it play out during this last session and special sessions. After a while, they stopped being special. but this tug of war over how much money ought to be in the rainy day fund and what we ought to actually spend it on, they decided to leave it up to voters as far as whether we would spend it on water, and that passed.
Right.
And then we're going to look at another one of these on transportation. We'll see what happens there. What do you think about that, about the idea that it seems like, in the estimation of a lot of people, they kick the can down the road, and then when they can't kick it anymore down the road, they kick it sideways to the voters and ask them to do it?
It was the refusal to use the rainy day fund at the time when there was a perception that we had to cut education funding that really got my attention for the first time around Texas politics. So this is in the 82nd legislature. Mm-hmm. I'm working for a living. I'm just reading the newspaper, and I'm reading that we're going to take a hatchet to public education, and we're not going to use the rainy day fund. And that struck me as utterly illogical. The rainy day fund exists so that we can sustain investment in areas where sustained investment is critical. How could that not be education? So I do think that, you know...
Well, I guess the argument there would be that education's ongoing, and the original purpose was to have, you know, one-time expenses come out of that. What would you say to that?
Well, I think the funds that roll into the rainy day fund are based on oil and gas... severance taxes, and those taxes go up and they go down because commodity volumes go up, commodity prices go up, they both come down.
Mm-hmm.
So to the extent that we have investments that we must make that ought not to go up and down, like mm-hmm. education, rainy day fund is a great place to put those excess revenues so that you can use them for those periods where we have a downturn. I think that's exactly the way the world looked to me, you know, when we went into the 82nd legislature, and mm-hmm. when they emerged, they refused to touch it, and that made no sense to me.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. I guess my overall comment is that as a voter, citizen, I don't see a rational discussion around the use of that rainy day fund. It comes back to somebody who can crunch the numbers and tell the voters honestly what's happening.
What do you think needs to be the priority as far as then? Not that it's going to be in the purview of the comptroller, but they'll certainly be looking to whoever the comptroller is for their opinion about it. The priority of spending for the legislature in the next session, they will have just gone through this vote of the people on transportation. And even if that passes, a lot of folks might look at it and say, well, if we get to 2015, we're in another legislative session, and we just passed a thing on transportation, why do we need to do it again? Didn't we just fix that?
Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, I think we clearly have to invest in education, we have to invest in transportation, we have to mm-hmm. invest in water. Beyond that, again, my point of view is that the controller's job is to crunch the numbers and provide the data so that people can do the analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't think, you know, it's appropriate for me to have a point of view in terms of what the legislature's, where their priority should be beyond those three.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the three that really strike me as obvious to everyone that we have to invest. Beyond that, it's really up to the legislature and the governor and the lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm. What's your family think about this, jumping into politics?
Well, they support it.
Yeah.
They actually like it. I have two sons that go to college. They're at UT.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're proud of their dad. I think they understand my motivation here. I mean, I'm setting aside a business career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting it on hold to do this. The reason why I'm doing it is that I think somebody really needs to do this. And so I share the same concern that, you know, that most people have, that, you know, politics doesn't seem to be working right now, right? So to have a role where I can be in the center of things, being very honest, being very transparent, mm-hmm. with an independent point of view, I'm not doing this for any other reason than that. They are naturally very proud. My wife is very supportive. My mom and dad, who live in Georgetown, mm-hmm. are very excited about it. They weren't at first, but they've warmed up to it.
Have you gone nuts? That's what I hear from a lot of candidates.
At first,
the family, their wives will say, what are you talking
about?
Well,
at first. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I said to my father, who was concerned about this, I said, Dad, do you want good people in politics?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely. And I said, well, then don't good people have to get into politics? And he said, okay. And so he's slowly gotten on board. But now he sees how interesting it is. It's actually quite a real – it's a joy. It's a joy to be campaigning for office. Because
we'll
I get
see
to,
if you keep that attitude as this goes forward. Mike Collier, thank you.
Thank you very much.